Well, first of all, I guess we have two announcements. The first announcement is I'm going to read something today, and I'm going to talk off the cuff today, and see if anybody has the least bit of an idea as to what the hell I'm talking about. I doubt it. I'm feeling a little discouraged in a way, in some way. And the reason is because we've been talking about loner body for quite a while now, and no one seems to have either the least bit of understanding of what I've been saying, or could care less. And there's a lot of care less involved, so that's okay. So, when I get through reading what I'm reading, and a whole bunch of other stuff, I'm not going to talk about loner body anymore. If nobody gets it, and to me it is in your face, clear and simple, but I don't think there is anybody out there that can talk back at me and describe in any way what loner body is all about. So, as a consequence, when I get through reading this stuff, that may take more than talking about the off the cuff and then reading this stuff, that I got going here, I'm going to quit talking about loner body. We're going to move on to number three. And that's the way it is. So, off the cuff. Several months ago, I got a request from a magazine, I'm supposed you all get to meet all the time, offering me a dirt cheap initial subscriptions to their magazine. And it looked sort of kind of interesting. They also offered me with that, by the way, the magazine is called The Skeptical Inquirer, if anybody's interested. They also offered me a free cup of coffee. I'm assuming that's some kind of fancy coffee. Well, I wrote them a letter back and said, look, I've never heard of the Skeptical Inquirer. Don't know what your magazine's all about, so why don't you send me a free copy of the magazine and keep your damn coffee? So they did. And when it came at the price they were offering it, I was planning to take 2 years, but subscription. But then after I was reading Skeptical Inquirer, I decided I'd only take one year. So I wrote back to them and said just exactly that. I said, a magazine that calls itself The Skeptical Inquirer has to me, a response more than just presenting both sides of an issue, but to present a third option. And since you don't seem to follow that procedure, all you do is convey what A says about B and what B says about A, or what they both say that about C, whatever. So I'll only take a 1-year subscription. Okay. So I got the second magazine last week, or I got it before that, but I didn't get around to reading it. And there is an there was an article in the magazine called the False Memory Syndrome, FMS. So now I'm going to read you something from the article, and then I'm going to talk about something else. The tragic story begins with Freud, early in his career when he made extensive use of hypnotism. Freud was amazed by the number of mesmerized women who dredged up childhood memories of being raped by their father. It was years before he became convinced that most of these women were fantasizing. Other analysts and psychiatrists agreed. For more than half a century, the extent of incestuous child abuse was minimized. Not until about 1980 did the pendulum start to swing the other way, as more solid evidence of child sexual abuse began to surface. There is now no longer any doubt that such incest is much more prevalent than the older Freud or the general public realized. Now I'm going to make a side comment. I'm assuming that by now you're wondering, what the hell has this got to do with Loner Body? Well, then in the latter 1980s, a bizarre therapeutic fad began to emerge in the United States. Hundreds of poorly trained therapists, calling themselves traumatists, began to practice the very techniques Freud had discarded. All over the land, they were putting patients under hypnosis and subtly prodding them into recalling childhood sexual traumas, memories of which presumably have been totally obliterated for decades. This is called Decades Delayed Disclosure, DDD. 80% of the patients who are claimed to experience DDD are women from 25 to 45 years old. 60% of their parents are college graduates, 25% with advanced degrees. More than 80% of their parents are married to their first spouse. Here's a typical scenario. A woman in her 30s seeks therapy for symptoms ranging from mild depression, anxiety, headaches, or the inability to lose weight, to more severe symptoms like anorexia. Her therapist, having succumbed to the latest mental health fad, decides almost at once that the symptoms are caused by repressed memories of childhood abuse. Profoundly shocked by this suggestion, the woman vigorously denies that such a thing could be possible. And the stronger her denial, the more the therapist believes she is repressing painful memories. The patient may be hypnotized or given sodium amytal or placed into a relaxed trance-like state, convinced that a childhood trauma is at the root of the patient's ills. The therapist repeatedly urges the woman to try to remember the trauma. If she is highly suggestible and eager to please the therapist, she begins to respond to leading questions and to less obvious signs of the therapist's expectations. After months or even years, images begin to form in the patient's mind. Shadowy figures threaten her sexually. And under continual urging, these memories grow more vivid. And she begins to recognize the molester as her father, or grandfather, or uncle. The more detailed the visions, the more convinced both she and the therapist become that the terrible truth is finally being brought to consciousness. To better trained psychiatrists, these details indicate just the opposite. Childhood memories are notoriously vague. Recalling minute details is a strong sign of fantasizing. As the false memories become more convincing, the patient's anger toward the once loved relative grows. The therapist urges her to vent this rage, turning the page. Sylvia Brown died in November. The therapist urges her to vent this rage, to confront the perpetrator, even to sue for psychic damage. Stunned by their daughter's accusations, the parents vigorously deny everything. Of course they will deny it, says the therapist. Perhaps even suppress their own memories of what happened. The family is devastated. A loving daughter has inexplicably been transformed into a bitter enemy. She may even join an incest survivor group where her beliefs are reinforced by hearing similar tales. She may wear a sweatshirt saying, "I survived." No one doubts that the childhood sexual assaults occur, but in almost every case, the event is never forgotten. Indeed, it festers as a lifelong source of shame and anger. Studies show that among children who witnessed the murder of a parent, not a single one repressed the terrible memory. Not only do victims of children or a child incest not repress such painful memories, to repress a memory means to completely forget the experience without any conscious effort to do so. Actually, they try unsuccessfully to forget them. That traumas experienced as a child can be totally forgotten for decades is the great mental health myth of our time. A myth that is not only devastating innocent families, but doing enormous damage to psychiatry. In the past, when juries found a parent guilty of child incest, there has been corroborating evidence, like photos or diaries or letters, testimony by others, a history of sexual misconduct, or even open admission of guilt. While juries today are increasingly more often judging a parent guilty without any confirming evidence other than the therapy-induced memories of the victim. patients as well as their families can be scarred for life. They're led to believe that bringing suppressed memories to light will banish their symptoms. On the contrary, the symptoms usually get worse because of traumatic breaks with loved ones. Moreover, this treatment can also cause a patient to refuse needed therapy from psychiatrists who have not fallen prey to the false memory syndrome epidemic. Pamela Freyd has likened the traumatist to surgeon doing brain surgery with a knife and a fork. Others see the epidemic as similar in many ways to the great witch hunts of the past, when disturbed women were made to believe they were in Satan's grip. The devil has been replaced by the evil parent. Assuming that that might have applicability to what we talk about in speaking of donor body self, can you, that article right there, that's only a small part of it, but that's a sort of a picture. Can you then offer to the skeptical inquirer a third option? Why does everything have to be this or that, right or wrong, good or bad? Whoever said that that was true except for language? Is there a third option or an explanation of all of that that has any bearing on loner body self? That's a question, not a rhetorical.
Yeah, I'm sure you're asking it. I'm sure you're asking it because there must be. And at the moment, I don't have a answer for that. So I'm thinking about it.
Well, how about loner body, given that it loner body, given that it comes with the loner body, or the memories and the genetic history of the parents, there is a possibility, at least, that somewhere in that genetic material are the stored memories of an actual case of incest.
Flesh it out. I don't agree. I don't agree. Allow me this. I don't agree that much incest was going on back in the 80s or even before that. We're saying, yeah, there's a lot of incest, there's a lot of child abuse, there's a lot of all sorts of things. But flesh that out.
Is it possible that the loner body contains memory of the sexual act of the parents that started it in the first place?
What do you mean?
Well, I guess I mean that a woman could, in this particular case, remember her father's sexual, I guess, activity, and think that it was her, the child, instead of like the mother and the body that.
But all you're doing, if I think this, is you're pushing this a generation back. Can you not?
Only one, yeah.
Can you not understand loner body to the point that you just don't move it around from generation to generation?
Didn't I say that it goes back the whole through the whole trace, all the generational memories.
So I'm just saying maybe it doesn't. All that does is push it out of reach.
Push it out of reach.
Sure. It happened generations ago or whatever. And so you can't deal with it.
I'm wondering is it then possible that there's bits of data in the loner body that can be assembled to create a story that didn't occur, but all the pieces and parts exist.
And then what? Tell me. Give me a description of that. You're speaking in conclusions. Don't do that. Say, isn't it possible that the lonely body felt and et cetera, things that happened, et cetera. Those are all conclusions. Give me a a good step-by-step process whereby we take the loner body and apply what we know about the loner body to make a significant understanding of what might be going on. Now the reason for that is that's just one thing your loner body to consider. There are thousands of health situations like that.
Okay, so I have a loner body, which for me means that it's it is a body created by my parents using the DNA that they inherited, on and on and on. And what that DNA is comprised of is, I don't know what, lots and lots and lots of memory information from the loner body line.
I just said the same thing with Patrick. You just pushed it into ancestor after ancestor after ancestor to its unreachable.
Well, I'm not saying that the event ever occurred. I'm just saying...
I didn't say that. I said you're making it unreachable.
Okay.
I said what I said. I didn't say what you said. And this is important because there are so many illnesses and problems of the same ilk as what is here presented in this glorying false memory syndrome per se. That we have to look at it.
Whether it's the story of sexual abuse or whatever it is, if I tell you a story, whether it's true or not, we use this day analysis and dreams and stuff, and if I told you a story, it would be the same thing. You would tell me about myself as I revealed it to you through my story.
That's not what I'm asking you. I am asking you, put your loner, the awareness of your loner body into this picture and tell me exactly how it is possible as a third option, rather than just say, oh, those are false memories. They're not false memories. Now what? how does a loaner body fit into that picture? And what do you do about, what is the what opportunity do you have to do anything about that, if at all?
Well, I don't know what you mean doing about, but...
How does a psychiatrist go about and deal with the patient who is recalling these memories? What's it all about? What is she recalling?
Or...
what might she be recalling? These are the kinds of ways I'm trying to get you to think about these things. But you don't take loner body or abiding self and expand it into considering. Listen to this. Do you know, and I'm speaking generally, even to the women, do you know any woman, especially a married woman, who her husband wanted to have sex and she didn't, and as a result of that, she feels that it's kind of a rape. She may not admit it, but isn't there a woman that feels that, in a sense, she's been raped by her husband? She may not use that word, but she's been forced into something she didn't, oh, I had a headache. Whatever. Is that possible?
Yeah.
Isn't it most probable? And so we say, as then that a loner body self provides you with memories. And so the mother before the child, who might have been in a relationship wherein the husband in any way, I want to have sex tonight, feels that, whether she gives into that or doesn't give into that, that's really the rape word. That she didn't want to have sex, but her husband insisted. And is that not then a, like the child's, say it was the father, as far as the mother is concerned, it was her husband. Now I can go through that in many, many ways, and part of the problem here is if you don't regenerate your body, self, and life from loner to something you truly desire, then you are living your parents' memories, which are not necessarily false, but then you may put them into this life's context and they have no reality whatsoever. But they do have a reality to the parents. So in dealing with the child, you're dealing with the wrong person.
So are you saying that the memories that I'm calling forth are not mine?
Of course they're not yours. That's what I've said from the very beginning about loner body, that you or anybody won't deal with. They're not your memories. Hell, it's not even your brain. They're not your beliefs. But you won't change or even consider the possibility that you ain't you. Okay. After I reading that last week, I watched a story on Roku. It was called Decoding Annie Parker.
Say that again, please.
Decoding. D-E-C-O-D.
Yes.
I-N-G. Annie, A-N-N-I-E, Parker, P-A-R-K-E-R. Now, what this is about is Annie Parker has breast cancer. Well, maybe it runs in the family and maybe it doesn't. Actually, they've shown that there are more women with breast cancer who do not have the gene for breast cancer than those who do have the gene. But this gal, a scientist, was trying to prove that breast cancer is inherited. And all of the scientists said, crap shit. Well, she did a lot of research and a lot of experimenting and a lot of doing until she found a gene. And she could show how the gene destructs. And as a consequence of that, Annie Parker had, as she put it, breast cancer. Now let's add loner body to this mix and say, isn't there a third option than that you done did something wrong, you lived breast cancer into you, or that you got it from your mother? Give me a third option. Use loner body. Use the relationship and the actions that we've talked about regarding loner body and see what you can come up with. This gal won all sorts of awards, scientific awards and everything else.
Was she so intensely nurturing or struggling with nurturing or over-nurturing that she manifested breast cancer in her own body?
Doing what and why?
Doing what and why? Caring so much about her research and producing the results she wanted.
Oh, you wait a minute now. Are you talking about, when you say she, are you talking about Annie Parker or are you talking about the researcher?
Oh, you made it sound like they were one and the same.
Huh?
You made it sound like they were one and the same.
They're not one and the same. Annie Parker was a woman with breast cancer, and the researcher, she had written to the researcher and got the researcher working about whether or not this is inherited.
Oh, okay.
So if it's not only inherited, but it's lived into your life relative to loner body, how might it be lived into your life and why? And what's going on?
Well, I still go back to the same thing. Isn't breast cancer evidence of nurturing gone wild?
So why? Why? Why did it nurturing go wild? Why? Give me a loner body explanation for that. See, we keep saying these things, and we ignore the fact that you're living a loner body. That's a dangerous thing to do.
Mm-hmm. So, I would offer that traditionally, let's say a woman's value in the decades past or centuries past was in how she produced children. And if that's inherited as an attitude or a DNA carried thing, someone who comes alive today and doesn't live or want to live in that way might find themselves in conflict with a very strong inclination they have in their body.
All you've done is what I said before. Don't do that. You've pushed it out of reach.
Okay, so then we might say, I could collapse that to a scant, you know, one person degree of separation to the mother may have felt that she was supposed to nurture or something like that, didn't necessarily want to and had this conflict, and the child lives that as well, can pick that up and live that.
Then you see how dangerous that is?
Only one generation separated. Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure. Oh, you know, it's funny, too, that you say that. It is only one generation that I can certainly see how a child growing up within that environment, even just around the house, might pick up on a whole lot of it.
Oh, no, fucking no.
Okay.
She's growing up within the environment of her memories, which ain't hers.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I mean, sure, there might be something around the house, but the memories that she is living, that environment of memories, are not hers. This is the point to loner body, which nobody is willing to take on and look at. And I don't understand what, for instance, my mother had just about every illness known to mankind. And when I went to the doctors today, he said, "You're the healthiest person of your age that I have seen in a long, long, long time." Now, isn't it possible, then, that what we're talking about when we say regenerate your loner body, you're regenerating those memories, the DNA pattern that was passed on that was active, and you then change that to a pattern that you desire? You don't have to live your parents' DNA. You don't have to live their attitudes and beliefs that were set in your brain. Why in the hell would you ever want to do that? I don't understand that. And as long as you live the loner body self that you're living, it isn't you. Why would you ever want to continue that? And see, I can't get that across. I really, really can't get that across. Nobody seems to give a shit. And so, okay, on you go. Now, to me, you put loner body into these two situations, and you create all of a sudden a third option for everything proposed in terms of false memory syndrome. It becomes clear, and you're then dealing with the wrong person, and you're also making perfect sense with the genetic that you're living, or the attitudes that you're living, the environment around the house when you were brought up is nothing compared with the environment of attitudes and beliefs that you've been living. Hello, anybody? Does anybody want to even dispute that? Well, these two illustrations are so humongous. And I really, beyond a certain point, I really, 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 really don't have time to pursue these, but you put loner body into the every action of the descriptionary, and you're then able to deal with the illness or the problem or the difficulty in the right generation. And by regenerating your body, that was the reason for showing you how to regenerate your stem cells. You've regenerated your body and mind entirely so that you aren't living your parents' genetic makeup or even their attitudes and actions.
Okay, so Roger, can I just ask something here? Then I guess what I haven't been taking into account is, are you... what I'm thinking you're saying here is that the loner body and memories and everything is functioning primary in my life. I'll start there.
No.
Meaning, like, I guess normally I try to see, oh, well, what does this say about how I'm living my life, how I function, the DNA I was given.
You're functioning it.
Mm-hmm.
You're functioning it. It isn't functioning. It isn't dragging you down the gutter. You are functioning it. And you can't stay the same and stop functioning it. You have to regenerate yourself such that those beliefs and memories and attitudes and actions and even the genetic inheritance are all different.
Are you saying that babies with the false memories are functioning those memories?
I didn't hear what you said.
Are you saying that the women with the false memories are functioning those memories into existence?
Of course.
Okay, so let me just kind of go through this because I think I'm starting to understand what you're saying. That they're, the way they live their lives, all of their attitudes and everything that they inherited from their parents, they're still doing that, and so therefore they are, the way they attitude, they can't help but create these false memories.
They're not creating the false memories, they're summoning the false memories forth.
Okay.
Because the false memory, the false memory might be, that's why it's so vague. It might be vague in terms of the mother having remembered or felt a situation where she gave in to her father when she didn't want to and you know, could call it rape, but doesn't want to speak of it in that way or think of it necessarily in that way. But in memory, what if she does?
Okay. So the mother sent, mothers, even though she didn't speak it, thought rape, the daughter summoned forth that memory into her life.
As rape. Of father, okay, who was husband mother. Of mother.
I get it. Okay.
See, so this is the importance of regenerating your body and self, and it's the importance of regenerating your beliefs and attitudes and your brain even, the way it functions, because all of those things are functioning the way your mother and father functioned. Even if they don't know it, it's so. It is so prima facie likely. And that's every aspect of your body, self, and life today. The things you don't like, the things you don't want, the things you do like, the things you do want, is what I've said from the very get-go. Have nothing to do with you. And yet those are the things that you spend your life struggling for or struggling against.
So you're not saying that I am a victim to these things that have nothing to do with me, but you are saying that I am living things like out of memory.
But wait a minute. Let me add to that.
Okay.
Now you are a victim. And you are a self-imposed victim because you know otherwise.
Oh.
And I have told you about regenerating your body, self, and life in that regard. And you would prefer to remain a victim to all of this stuff. Can't you take your image of life and your relationships and your life today into that image and say what it is you want to do about that, if anything? Life doesn't care.
Like you said, all the months you've been talking about this, I hadn't really seriously thought, like what you just said, to take it into consideration in my life today.
But I've said it in so many ways. I just thought that these two illustrations were so clear that if you can't understand it from these two illustrations, then I'm through. Mm-hmm. I don't want to discuss loner body ever again. But before I quit speaking of loner body, I have some things I want to read. It's kind of like, this is a sort of a summary, and it has to, you might say it has all I want to say as an introduction to loner body. And if you don't understand it, or it doesn't make sense as we go along, you damn well better interrupt, because if you wait until the end, then what you've got is false memories of what I said, which I didn't say. So I've been writing for a long couple of years a book called Sentience. I talked about this before. Now, what is sentience? If we look at science has no place for you in what science says. And when it does take you into consideration, science blames everything on you. Science wants to talk about matter and energy, particles and stuff that makes particles move. It doesn't want to talk about intentions and desires and feelings and what's going on. It's just what's going on. Religion is really only interested in God, not in you. Oh, they try to make it sound like we're God's interested in you. No. Everything is in religion is about God, not you. Now, philosophers, I'm reading more of this Chinese philosophy stuff, Confucianism. It's blatantly only talking about your life today, how to live your life today. What the hell difference does it make how you live your life today? You say, well, it makes a difference to me. It won't in the long run. You're just about to die 2 seconds away. What the hell difference did it make? Oh, I was a good guy. So what? Well, I had fun. So what? I can't get that across to anybody. But I had to pay my bills. Well, then do like what Jesus said. Pay unto Caesar the things that are Caesar and render unto God the things that are... Wait a minute. Is it possible for you to consider pay unto Caesar the things that are Caesar's? But pay unto yourself the things that are yours. That's what sentience is about. Sentience is about you. What the universe is all about relative to you. What science says, oh, well, you know, we don't deal with you. Except they come in and say, well, except in quantum physics, quantum mechanics, and all the things, then the observer controls the situation. Well, you're an observer in your life. You control every situation. But science then says, the observer that controls the observation or the experiment screws it all up. We can't depend on anything. So quantum physics is a masterpiece of, what do we call it? Junk science? And science in that regard, I mean religion, only cares about God and what God thinks and what God does for you or what God gave you or what God expects of you. Not anything about you. God does all the good stuff. The crap shit is left over for you. Whoopee. God is testing you. Oh, you Canadians. There's that song again. God is watching. Philosophers, Confucius, how to get along with what's going on today. What difference does it make? Let me ask you a question. This is a rhetorical question. Would you rather be a thing or a pattern? In other words, a pattern of many things. Oh, you say, well, now they bring it up that way. I'd rather be a pattern of anything. But you only deal with yourself as a single thing, not as a pattern. As a pattern of many things, no one life or no one event or no one occurrence really, 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 really makes any difference because it's the overall pattern. That is you. For instance, I got into a, I think I mentioned this last week, I don't know. Anyway, I got into a discussion about somebody was talking about he did this and he did that, this other person, third party. And I wanted to get in to talk about the pattern of the person rather than the action or activity of what the person did really doesn't matter at all. And I said, why are you talking about that? Well, how else are we supposed to communicate? Well, I left the conversation at that point. But can you consider yourself a pattern? Well, wait a minute. Wait just a minute now. Instead of considering yourself a pattern, could you consider yourself a motif? M-O-T-I-F. Now, a motif is, get a picture of Egyptian, a temple, whereby they may have a picture of a whole line of individuals. That's a motif. In other words, it shows, it isn't just a pattern, but it shows what the pattern is about. Now, wouldn't you rather be a motif? Which is what you are anyway. Because a pattern doesn't set anything or reveal anything, whereas a motif shows you the pattern of very specific things. And I could look at a pattern of Egyptian warriors going across the desert and etc. I could take one or two warriors out of the picture and it really doesn't make any difference as far as the motif is concerned. So nothing you do in this life then really, 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 really matters. It is the pattern. And is it possible for you to consider then that in living a lower body self. That isn't even your pattern. That's somebody else's pattern. Have you not considered that that's why you have all your pains and problems and difficulties in life? Because you're living a pattern that isn't you. What is the pattern of, if you want to know the pattern of your loner self, look back at your life today and write a story. The whole story will follow a pattern. But that's a loner pattern. Is that what you really want to be living? The answer is, and likelihood is, no, not at all. Well, the question that comes to mind is, are you willing to reconsider everything about yourself and life you have accepted as true? If so, sentience offers tremendously expansive awarenesses of yourself and life. We can begin by talking about your loner self in order to take the next step into abiding self, to take the next step into particular universal, so I can begin to show you and you can see yourself far greater than anything that science and religion and philosophy have ever imagined for you. But this is your life, so why don't you do it? Why wait for science to open these doors and then you step into that? Why don't you open these doors? Are you willing to open your mind to such emotions and attitudes? You will also find that in all of that, you will gain a new awareness far beyond anything you have ever heard of or encountered before. I guess the question really is, are you willing to summon new life into your life? New life for you to be and be aware of, and live and reveal to others? Or is your loner body self and life, as usual, what you desire to continue in a universe of death? Because as you continue living your loner body and self, that ends at death. You are not a physical being on a spiritual path, nor are you a spiritual being on a physical journey. You are not a physical being on a spiritual path, nor are you a spiritual being on a physical journey. For actually, both the path and the journey, if we can rightly form and illuminate them by name, and even the being we refer to as you, are all emergent and just appear as you go along. In other words, you are the motif, you are the pattern. You are a pattern, but the pattern of yourself is far different or other than a pattern of a loner body and being. In a loner body and being, all you're doing is extending the path of your parents. To see and know yourself, do not look in a mirror, nor deeply within yourself. Recount the story of your life, and that is a clear portrait of you as a loner or abiding being. For you do not create your path or your life. Contrary to what everybody says, you do not create your path, nor do you create your life. They create you. You are that path in life. Are you living the path in life you truly desire being? Or are you living a self in life loan to you? Are you certain enough of this answer that you would bet your life on the answer? Because that is exactly what you're doing. Long ago, far, far away, and also in distant lands here on Earth, there were places, and I've gone over this before, but I'm taking it as an extract from the Book of Sentience, which is a whole new category of knowledge and understanding that is based on you. Science is not based on you. Religion has nothing to do with you. Philosophy has nothing, it says you all the time, but it really, philosophy has nothing to do with you. Mysticism has nothing to do with you. But you and your life is all about you. So what else, why else do you want all this extraneous information that has nothing to do with you? This is what sentience is about. Okay. Long ago, far, far away, and also in distant lands here, there were places where people believed everything is divine, such that there was no separation. There was no separation between spirit and matter. It doesn't mean that there was one. They can be individual without separation. When we go into number three, we'll talk about single-mindedness and stuff of that nature. Physical was merely an illuminated form of spirit. And they were not in opposition. They were not opposed in any way. And all individuals were divine in their own authority. And people were taught not to do anything they did not want the world to do. You've heard that today as the golden rule. Well, originally it was said, do not do unto others that which you would not have them do unto you. And then J.C. changed that around. Of course, it didn't become the Golden Rule until about 1600s when the name was applied. But anyway, he changed it around to do unto others as you would have them do unto you. What if you are willing to say, do not do anything you do not want the world to do? Doesn't that create then a greater image of yourself in life? Not down to each individual doing or person or event or occurrence. Don't do anything you don't want the worldly universe to do. Ooh. And as a constant reminder of this authority, everyone was given a muse, or God, as a creative spirit or inspiration to form and live as a personal guide. And that was the spirit of illuminated life. And all was well. God was a muse. God was an inspiration, and he didn't. There was not a God that controlled everything. But it grew that way in an attempt for religion to gain control. My God's bigger than your God. in addition to bringing individuals alive, to empower and illuminate them, remember now, form illuminates spirit. To bring people alive, to empower and illuminate them, parents gave their children a carnal body and self. We understand that as a body and DNA pattern. The self is the DNA pattern. And also gave them an environment of beliefs and ways and a pattern of memories, all as come alive gifts, so that even as children, they could learn about their abiding self and authority and regenerate their mortal body, self, and ways, and their memories and emotions as they truly desired being. You've lived with your parents' ways and emotions so long that you think they're yours. They never were. Many centuries later, the ways of these people were memoried and briefly brought to life again, as described in Judges 21:25, where it says, "In those days there was no king in Israel. Every man did that which was right in his own eyes, and all was well." Are you willing to do only those things which are right in your own eyes? Life is not about spiritualizing the physical world. It's not about discovering God or bringing God alive in the world. Life, I know you don't believe this, life is about you and every other person individually. For as the world, the universe is so plenary that it is as it is, and simultaneously is as you are and as all others are as well. Gotta make a. You as well, in the same way that the universe is so plenary, you as well are so plenary that you can continue your mortal body self as you are today and struggle eternally to become what you truly desire. Or, since your loner body self is as a come alive gift, this enables you to participate in life, to know and experience self. You can regenerate your loner body self and environment and give yourself an identity you would willingly be and live eternally. Or not. Unfortunately, for those who continue their original mortal body self and ways instead of regenerating them as they truly desire, their eternal abiding self and personal authority will be bred out of them. And you've commented before, bred out of me? What the hell does that mean? Such that parents and God and even others will be authorities in their life. It's surprising to you, but you don't realize it to this extent. You have, in living your loner self, body self, you have almost no authority in your life at all. Have you ever considered breaking your obsessive attachment to your loner body self? And give yourself greater, more personal, come alive gifts to be and live eternally. No matter the conditions of the world around you, well, don't be too certain. For Socrates declared, an unexamined life is not worth living. So you must look carefully and clearly and deeply all around, not within, all around, at the self and life you are living and constantly struggling against. Is that anything you want to be and live eternally? Remember, physical forms give life and illumination to spirit. So don't look within for your true self. As a spirit without a loner body self, you are as a dream. And though you exist, you cannot participate in life. You have many freedoms and few restraints in a dream or in meditation as well. But your life and involvements are not substantial, and they have no real meaning or lasting effect for you or others, or not even on matters around you. And you cannot experience how special you are. Well, that said, which self in life would be desirably real for you? Physical or spiritual? And which would be as an illusion? And which self in life would you choose to be part of eternally? Like the man who dreams he is a butterfly, and after awakening he cannot be certain if he is a man dreaming he is a butterfly, or whether he is a butterfly dreaming he is a man. Can you say with any degree of certainty whether you are a spiritual being having a physical experience, or a physical being having a spiritual experience? Whether you are living a natural body and self, or a loner body and self, or maybe you believe you are a spiritual being that is burdened by a physical self and life. Well, the question is, which self in life would you choose to be and live eternally and call real? Would you rather exist as an embodied being or as an unembodied being? This is not a question of existing, not existing. It is a matter of being embodied or not embodied. A spiritual life, like a dream, is a life that is only real for you. No other person or thing can be involved. And the same is true of an inner self and life. While a physical self and life enables you to be involved with others, they can be involved with you. Well, which life is real for you? An embodied physical life or an unembodied virtual life? Physical or spiritual? Particular or universal? Mortal or immortal? And which would you choose to be eternally? Ancient Greeks, recognizing the problem of regenerating your come alive self and gifts to accurately portray you, believed each child is given a daimon. We've discussed this before. D-A-I-M-O-N. Before birth, which, like the long-forgotten muse called God, is an inner spirit or mentor and a sense of inspiration for each person. To ancient Greeks, daimons were guardian spirits that existed between man and God. But unfortunately, religions of that time considered daimons to be evil spirits, known as demons, and demanded that their religious believers only have faith in their God and depend on their God for health, guidance, and security. Thus, well, the authority of self was taken away from you and given to God, or so you thought. Back in the old days, when many gods were worshipped, evil and grief and afflictions were easily blamed on other deities. Let's assume we have God and Allah. Isn't that going on today? If you believe in God, then Allah is doing, and the believers of Allah are doing all the bad stuff. Yeah, but with only one or two gods, evil and suffering could only be blamed on a devil or evil spirit, or on a competing deity, or on believers like you. And that helped all religions maintain their particular God as unconditionally loving and compassionate, while all other gods and believers were false. That sort of reminds me of false memory syndrome, doesn't it? For centuries, it has been declared that mankind sinned and fell away from God. It says this in the Bible and in many ancient texts. And since the loner body self you are living today is comprised of its ancestors, what was told to them was memoried and passed down through DNA to you. And in having your loner body and self, and in living your loner body and self, you are living those words and beliefs. It's as though you have been told these things over and over and over for centuries. Well, fortunately, this is not true. Mankind did not sin and fall from God. And neither did you. God was taken away from mankind and from you, and your authority was given to God. Though you are living your loner body's ancestor today, in this, the loner self and soul you are living are not eternal, nor do they continue. They are other and different in each life. Therefore, if you want to continue, if you want to experience and be aware of continuing, if you want to discover the joy of meaningfully fulfilling and enhancing yourself and life today, and if you want to renew your authority in life today, begin by regenerating your loner body self and your existing ways and memories to be abiding as you truly desire. this is your personal doing this, regenerating your loner body and self, is your personal resurrection of self before death. It is resurrection of your authority and resurrection of God to be your personal muse. Actually, it is your resurrection over religion. For in order to maintain its teaching of the unique physical resurrection of Jesus, the Christian church taught against any concept of resurrection or reincarnation of you, which took your extensive life from you as well. You alone are responsible for your everlasting self and life. Therefore, to go forth from here as you truly desire, you must first take a step backwards to the past. Backwards to the past and to your own authority. Otherwise, you will continue living new and entirely different loner bodies and selves, such that your awareness and experience of continuing, such that the authority of self and the resurrection of God as your personal muse will all be bred out of you. Is this what you want to occur? Though many people have tried to convince you that you and your body as constructs of God are perfect in all ways, the loner body self you are living today was actually created by your parents and infused with their distorted beliefs, memories, and ways, such that in bonding with your loner body self, you bind yourself to these incorrect views of yourself and life. The self you are living today is not you, for you are living a loner self that is part of your loner body. Actually, you are living a stranger's body, self, and memories, and these are not yours. Is it any wonder you don't know your true self and abiding nature, nor do you know who you really are or why you are here? For centuries, spiritual teachers have advised you to meditate on God as divine power, and to continue that meditation until you are joyously aware of God's presence and authority in your life as a sense or feeling or strange occurrence or personal appearance, and maintain that in memories. But that is not what you want today, is it? Do you see how that advice is very similar to false memory syndrome? You are better served to resurrect God to everlasting life by carrying God with you in memory as an inspiring muse for everything you do in life and for everything you want the universe to be to you. For though meditation may be good for your mortal body and tends to soothe your mind and calm your reactions, meditation strengthens your loner body and false memories. And meditation also destroys the enlivened, abiding self you truly desire. And It eliminates access to the muse and authority carried in memory, such that in meditation, you actually lose what you desire most and seek. Suscitation, which is a part of sentience, awakens you to the abiding self and life you truly desire. Why do you suppose your pains and problems and habits and discontent are so strong within you today? Many would declare, this is because karma carried over from past lives, which you cling very tightly to. And this in some way is certainly true, except that this is your loner body's karma. It is not yours. You are carrying and struggling with another person's burdens and memories and karma. So how do you expect to overcome undesirable traits, habits, conditions, and memories that are not even yours? Yet you go to the doctor and expect that he's going to fix these things, but they're not even yours. You can't even participate in your own well-being. But what you can do is you can live as you truly desire, such that this karma falls away, revealing you as you truly are. Life is not a mystery, nor is it unreal, and you should not forsake physical life for any promised spiritual existence. Your struggles in life and your pains, problems, and afflictions are because you are living and struggling against a loner body and self, and imposing that on yourself as yourself. If you are ill, or if you seek happiness and understanding and want to continue in life, and we administer to your neighbor, would that help you? Of course not. And in the same way, fixing and healing and teaching your loner body, which is not you either, will do nothing for you. Instead of struggling so hard to become who you want to be, live who you are willing to be eternally, and you will discover that's exactly who you are, which has nothing to do with the loner body self you've limited and living, you are living and struggling with today. But you don't believe any of this. You think you can keep struggling with your loner body and self, and that you can overcome all of these limitations and become a great and wonderful spiritual being. Forget it. Despite what you have been told for years, and your loner body has heard and carried for centuries, your life today is real. Really real. It's not an illusion. For all things, physical form enliven and illuminate spirit. But in living and continuing your loner self and your original come alive gifts, you have made yourself and life an unknown, unknowable mystery. And you know that that's true. And that is a source of your physical spiritual conflicts. And those who tell you, well, follow a spiritual path or live a spiritual way of life, or who claim that a spiritual life is the only true way, are actually advising you to forsake yourself for a loner body and life. which then makes yourself and life an illusion and an endless struggle. There is no salvation or deliverance from everlasting death in that. Do not be deceived. God, religions, God, and beliefs will not serve you or bring you happiness and fulfillment, nor will they bring you wisdom and true understanding, or the continuing life you desire. However, regenerating your loner body and self and your other come alive gifts, like your beliefs and attitudes and ways, regenerating your body and your other gifts to correctly portray you, and resurrecting God as an inspiring muse will certainly transform you and your life. For God as a muse will inspire you to once again live by your own authority and experience that in your life. Now I gotta say something. I'm not too sure whether this is included in the thing. When I ask you to regenerate your loner body and self to be abiding as you truly desire, then that abiding self is your God. It is you. It is your inspiration. And that abiding self is your muse. It's not God in the sense of the way it's portrayed by Islam, nor portrayed by Mormons, nor portrayed by Christians. It is you. And that God is an abiding self that is fully and completely personal to you. Did you ever consider that the universe exists only in waves of vibrations of black and white and shades of gray, which you convert to colors? But this conversion to colors does not mean there is no objective world of color. It's just that the universe's colors are various vibrations or waves. The universe's sounds are also vibrations, such that a tree falling in the woods creates waves of vibrations that you convert to sounds. The universe is so binary that it is as its vibrations are, and also is as each person receives, converts, and interprets these vibrations to be. Actually, the physical world gives form and life to spirit. Well, maybe we should actually change that again. Actually, you give physical form and life to spirit. You give color to life. You give sound to life. The data information of your body and life of the universe is precisely formed and offered through vibrations of memory. How you convert and interpret those memories is up to you. If a physical life enables you to know yourself as a spiritual being, and a spiritual life enables you to know yourself as a physical being, which is emergent from physical you or spiritual you? What is emergent from physical you, spiritual you in communion? And does that possibly have any interest for you? Apparently not. You constantly declare that you're willing to change and live by your own authority again, and you frequently adopt a veneer of new beliefs and understanding and ways of self and life. However, since you're still living your loner body and self with ancient beliefs, you have not actually change those beliefs about yourself and life, nor about God. So no change of any substance has actually occurred or can occur. Got just a little bit more. The more you concentrate broadly and see and listen all around and stop searching within, the sooner you will know the authority of self. Look or listen within and you will see and hear your loner self and religion's God, which will limit or destroy your personal self and authority again. Because of the continued teachings of loner beings about God and seeking within, very, very few people today understand or live the authority of self with God as an inspiring muse. The best way to be eternally happy and self-realized is to live the authority of self again. For the only true meaning and significance of life is to know and live yourself as you create yourself to be and desire being. This alone is true happiness. Authority of self is not about superiority or authority over others, nor is it about commanding or controlling others. It is not about power and force. Hey, by the way, it's not about commanding or controlling the universe. It's not about strength or demanding respect. If you believe you must maintain an air of authority that requires agreement and submission, you are wrong. And your authority doesn't mean you are right. If you want to know or realize your authority and constantly experience the joy of living your authority, then no matter what you are asked to do or expected to do or paid to do, always do more. Set your own standards and do more. Is it possible in this that we can say you were expected to live your loner body? What I'm asking you, are you willing to do more? Are you willing to live your loner body as an abiding being? Well, but never impose your standards on others, for living your authority is for you. Do this and you will find yourself living by your own standards and know you have the authority to do exactly that. Don't lessen yourself or your authority to what is expected of you. And I have to repeat that what is expected of you is that you will live your loner body to the finest degree possible. And if you do that, though you don't realize it, you will destroy all authority in your life. Well, with that, we're going to close off talking about loner body. If you don't get it from that this evening, the illustration and the effects of and the authority that you're throwing away by living your loner body and self, and how then by regenerating your loner body and self to an abiding you, you regain your authority and live yourself and life in that way. If you don't understand that, then we can talk about loner body until the cows come home and we wouldn't gain a thing. So I quit. I quit talking about loner body. That's it. You understand it. You can expand everything I've said. like in false memory syndrome. Think about every illness and problems and difficulties you have in your life. Well, that said and done is done. You now have an opportunity to bitch or complain. I guess there's no bit.
I have a question. Roger, I have a question.
Yeah.
I didn't know if we wanted to break in or not earlier, but you had said about, I don't know, a couple minutes ago that meditation destroys your abiding self or something like that? Authority? Okay. It strengthens your loner body or something like that?
Yes.
Can you talk about that? Meditation.
What we're talking about here is your authority, and your authority is only involved with interactions with other. Meditation is all about no self, no interactions. So the very thing in terms of your abiding self that you want as an interaction of yourself with others, meditation starts right off with saying, well, calm your mind, quit thinking, and stop and get rid of yourself. So, do you want to live without self? Okay, that's fine. If that's what you want, meditate. Do you want to live without interactions with others? Well, fine. That's okay. But then you have no authority.
It's meditation is about inaction.
That's right.
And not about actioning.
Oh, that's a great point, Misty.
And your abiding self is all about actioning yourself as you truly desire. When you action yourself, we could say, wait a minute now. Do you understand when I said it's not about commanding the universe?
It's about commanding yourself.
That's right.
As you act.
And as you act, you have in truth commanded the universe. But if you act to command the universe, then you've thrown away all your authority. Your authority is that you can command yourself and act yourself.
Oh, yeah, I was just saying, I see that now, is if you act to control the universe, you're not living any authority yourself, you're living the authority of the universe.
All of these things in that regard. And it doesn't seem to do me any good to repeat it over and over and over and over and over again. You guys put it together and decide for yourself. I'm moving on. Miss M's moving with me.
All right.
Okay, well, there you are. You can write me a bitchy email if you want to. I don't really care. But we're leaving loner body. Anything else said over that is redundancy after redundancy. I'm not interested in that. Okay. Good night for now.